One of the biggest automotive events of the year is taking place in the Motor City. The North American International Auto Show, better known as the Detroit Auto Show, is wrapping up its first week. We're getting a solid glimpse into what automakers have in store for the coming year. And if you're in the market for a new pickup, you might be in luck. Trucks seem to be the big winner at this year's show, but there's been a little something for everyone. And there's a lot of high technology on the way, too, in the auto market. Todd Lassa is the Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine. Todd, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good evening, Rob. Good to be here.
Well, before we get into what's going on there, can you paint a picture of what goes on at an auto show for people who haven't been to one of these major ones? What's the scene like?
This week it starts out with the press days, which in this case was Sunday and Monday, and a little bit of Tuesday, and then there are industry days. This is in the case of the Detroit Auto Show for the week leading up to the public days. Basically, it's a way for automakers to show off their new products. These are cars and trucks that I haven't had a chance to drive yet because they're brand new. They're showing off the new models on the show floor. Traditionally, it's also a time to show some concept cars and show direction where automakers are intending to go with future product. Concept cars have started to lose a little steam, if you will, lately, although there were three important concepts at this show, all done by the Japanese automakers.
Well, let's get into some general trends. What are you seeing as you look at what's out there at the auto show?
There's always, for years, there have been this move toward more autonomy, more connectivity in cars. That's something that's kind of ongoing. Of course, there's a lot of talk about electrification. That's not quite the same as going full battery electric, but adding mild hybrid or regular hybrid systems, we're seeing that even in pickup trucks. The Ram 1500 pickup truck launches in a little while, in a few months, with a what they call 48-volt system, a 48-volt electrical system that kind of aids the gasoline engine with extra power and also a better fuel economy because better stop-start systems. Stop-start, if you're not familiar with them, are the systems that shut the engine down when you come to a stoplight and keep, you know, the air conditioning and the heater this time of year and the radio and everything else going, and then starts up automatically as soon as you put your foot on the throttle. So we're seeing more of that. And this year is the year of the truck, but that has a lot to do with product cadence, the fact that that General Motors and Fiat Chrysler have been working on new trucks, which are still a huge, important part of the market for several years. And so there are new full-size trucks from Chevrolet at this show and the new full-size Ram, which is part of Fiat Chrysler, at this show. Ford, in addition, is showing its latest, it's bringing back its so-called mid-size truck, which is the Ford Ranger.
Yeah, and it seems like, reading your publications, some other companies have maybe dropped out of that mid-size pickup market. Is that right?
Well, actually, Ford had dropped out for about 5 or 6 years. I think it's been about that long. General Motors dropped out just briefly for about 2 years and then came back with the Chevrolet Colorado and the GMC Canyon. The Ford Ranger, it looked like Ford was going to drop out permanently. Those trucks, the last Ford Ranger that Ford offered was a very aged product back in the early 2010s, and it really didn't give you much of a fuel economy advantage over a full-size F-150, nor did it give much of a price advantage, although now people are buying more and more expensive pickup trucks in that full-size category, so this can kind of slot below that. So when Chevy and GMC brought back their mid-size trucks, Ford looked at it, and Ford wants to be the pickup truck leader, and so it had to bring that back and compete. Those are more of lifestyle trucks. You generally won't see work crews using those smaller pickup trucks, even though small pickup truck, what you consider small pickup now, those mid-sized trucks are about the same size as a full-size pickup truck from three or four generations ago. And then you have Fiat Chrysler, Sergio Marchionne, the CEO, said that he doesn't see any reason to bring back the Dodge Dakota, which was the competitor in that category. But there's not a reason to bring back the Dodge Dakota because instead we'll soon have a Jeep Wrangler pickup truck, probably called the Scrambler, and that would serve that kind of lifestyle vehicle need in the pickup truck market.
Talking to Todd Lassa, Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine, looking at the big auto show going on now in Detroit. Covered trucks some there. Todd, what are you seeing when it comes to cars?
Well, what I'm seeing when it comes to cars is kind of a move from cars to sport utility vehicles. There's still a lot of interest in cars, but last year there were about 17.15 or 17.2 million cars and trucks sold in the United States. And of those, about two-thirds were either pickup trucks, regular other sorts of trucks, or sport utility vehicles. And for example, one of the standout concepts was the Lexus LF1 Limited. Limitless. It's hard to keep these names straight sometimes.
Sure.
And the Lexus is a it's a concept, but it's a kind of a tall, something between a tall station wagon and a sport utility vehicle, only with much better proportions than sport utility vehicles currently on the market, that I feel, and there's some indication, could be replacement for the Lexus GS sedan, so that Lexus, along with some of the other luxury manufacturers, will probably be paring down their sedan selection in the future and just adding more sport utility vehicles or crossover vehicles to their lineups, and this would kind of replace the mid-size sedan, and Lexus would continue to do the smaller IS and larger LS. It's a very good-looking car, though, and again, largely because of those proportions and because, at least in my mind, it doesn't look that much like at least a traditional sport utility vehicle. It's much less clunky-looking than that.
And Todd, you mentioned autonomy earlier, meaning people talk about self-driving cars. I understand there are different levels and gradations of how autonomous a car is. Where are we on self-driving cars right now?
Well, we've had some of the systems slowly come on over the last 10, 12, 15 years. Adaptive cruise control is one kind of stepping stone toward that, the type of cruise control that will change its speed if another car cuts in front of you or if you catch up with a car in your lane on the freeway. You have some controls, assist in keeping in your lane. You have radars, you have cameras being added to cars, and we're currently at about a level two, between a level two and level three with the new Cadillac Super Cruise system, which will stay in its lane on a highway, on a limited access highway, and steer for you while you're sitting behind the wheel. You have to remain attentive, though, and there's actually a system within that car that a sensor that can tell if you're not paying attention to the road, and then it will tell you have to take over driving again. So this is we're still in the early stages, but things are progressing pretty quickly, maybe even more quickly than we thought. For example, GM, which of course does the Cadillac Super Cruise, makes the Cadillac Super Cruise on the Friday before the auto show. And the day after the CES wrapped up in Las Vegas, the Consumer Electronics Show announced that it would be mass producing a level four, level five driverless car by next year. And this is a car without any steering wheel, without pedals, without any kind of controls. Level four would be more likely for it, which means it would be geofenced. It would only work in areas where the roads are controlled and limited to pedestrians and bicyclists, for example.
We're talking right now about the top automotive trends for 2018. Our guest is Todd Lassa, Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine. He's giving us the highlights from the Detroit Auto Show going on now, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you car or truck shopping in 2018? If so, what is important to you in a new vehicle, and what features can you live without? If you've been following the show, what are you excited about, and would you drive a driverless car? Kind of a paradox there. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Todd Lassa from Automobile Magazine. He's with us to talk about the big reveals and hot trends at this year's Detroit Auto Show and what it all means for drivers and consumers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about the latest car technology, the new releases, what's on the market? What are you looking for if you're looking for a car right now? And what do you think of the idea of driverless cars, more electric cars on the market, or at least electric options? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@WPR.org. And Todd, you talked about more connectivity, high-tech connections for cars. What are we seeing this year at the show?
Well, we're seeing a proliferation of Apple CarPlay and Android for auto, and more 4G LTE systems with Wi-Fi hotspots right inside your car. Of course, the other element of this is that the automakers want to connect cars to each other so that they talk with each other, and that's part of the road to autonomy. To make it safe, if your car is self-driving and knows where the other cars are, you'll have much less chance of any kind of accident, any kind of collision. But of course, you also have the issue of, well, who controls the data? Who owns the data? Who owns the data there? But yes, the cars are just, more and more entertainment information systems inside the car, and being able to listen to Spotify or use the car to talk hands-free on your phone, that sort of thing.
Sounds like potential for a lot more distraction. Is that a safety concern? Maybe we better have driverless cars if we have all this internet access in the car.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Rob. It's that all these distractions, all these potential distractions, go hand in hand with driverless cars. It's kind of which comes first. And if you have even that Cadillac Supercruise system that's already available. And then there are other levels a little bit below the Cadillac system from some of the competitors, Nissan, for example, where you really you can get by without paying attention quite so much. That's not what they're meant for. You're supposed to be watching the road, but in the end, once these cars are capable of self-driving, you'll be able to pay attention to those distractions instead of pay attention to the road. Eventually, that'll be the case.
Let's bring on a caller now. Eric is with us in Milwaukee. Eric, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I wanted to mention, this is probably 10 years down the road, but I wanted to mention this idea of time, how much more time we would have in our lives if we're not actually driving. Say you're planning for a meeting, or say you're out with some friends and you can have a drink in the car on the way to wherever you're going. All these things that are going to make our lives so much faster, which, I mean, a good thing or not, it's going to happen. And I think that there's going to be a just kind of change in the way we live our lives, and I think that's something we should reflect on.
Eric, thanks for the call. So, Todd, your thoughts on more time in our lives, time well spent in traffic?
Well, I think Eric's got it right. The question is, how are we going to be spending that time? Downside, as far as I'm concerned, is that GM's already it's working on a system within its SiriusXM and connectivity technology to be able to sell you more stuff in the car. In other words, the car is driving itself. Would you like to stop for a coffee at Brand X Coffee down the block here? Do you need to go here? Maybe we suggest restaurants or whatever. Then on the other hand, if the car is driving itself to work, the automakers make a point that you might still want to be able to drive a car if you're an enthusiast like me, where you like to drive, but you don't want to be doing that in stop and go traffic on the way to work. Well, what are you going to be doing instead? You're going to be working on the way to work. So we're going to be putting in more work hours. That's probably going to be the case.
Eric, thanks for that call. I want to just pass along a quick question from James in Milwaukee. We're a little short on time, but James is looking for a car. Price is an issue. Are there option-free, maybe lower budget cars on the horizon, Todd?
Well, there are always low-priced cars available if you're talking about a brand-new car, and car prices are going up. But even with the with all this technology coming on board, if you're willing to do without some of the latest technology, there are some pretty good cars in the $20,000 to $25,000 area, and cars like the Honda Civic, one of the best in class. You can go down to say $15,000 to $20,000. This is MSRP, and go to a smaller car like a Honda Fit, or I hate to keep mentioning Honda. There are other brands that are very good in this area that have some decent cars. Subaru. Impreza, Mazda 3, that give you a decent amount of features, decent amount of space, and even though they're smaller cars, the crash structures and the safety features are so good that they are quite good. You don't have to worry about driving a smaller car among all the trucks that are on the road these days.
Todd, thanks a lot for joining us. Enjoy the rest of the auto show.
Rob, happy to do it.
That's Todd Lassa. He's the Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine. He joined us to talk about some of the highlights and trends at this year's Detroit Auto Show and give us a glimpse into what we could be driving in the nearish future. Wisconsin researchers are joining a worldwide effort to discover new antibiotics through crowdsourcing. As Shemaine Mills reports, it's medical problem solving on a really large scale.
A dwindling supply of new antibiotics is a health threat that scientists around the world are trying to solve. They need as much help as possible, but there's a shortage of science graduates in the U.S. Joe Handelsman wants to change that by teaching every college freshman the basics of research.
If we could get every freshman in college into research courses and teach them the excitement of discovery and what science really is, the inquiry process, and hook them on it, we would have a chance at, one, keeping more students in science, and even better, we could have a scientifically literate society.
Handelsman directs the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. That's where college instructors from around the state recently took a week-long crash course as part of what's called the Small World Initiative. It's the brainchild of Handelsman and presented on this day by University of Connecticut biology professor Nicole Broderick.
We're really looking forward to having you here for the week, so we're going to start things off with a bit of an introduction. So I'm going to tell a bit about the background for Small World and what we're going to be doing this week.
As part of the Small World Initiative, instructors like UW-Green Bay associate biology professor Brian Merkel learn how to teach their students how to find new antibiotics to replace those that no longer work.
Once I heard about it, I just couldn't believe that something like this has existed. So for me, just personally, professionally, I'm going to learn some new things, which I am very excited about, very passionate about. But I think what it can do for our students and how it can address this problem, do all of that at the same time, it's an incredible opportunity.
Merkel and other participants spent part of the week in the lab. Most of the widely used antibiotics have come out of the dirt, and that's where the Small World Initiative is looking for the next generation of drugs. In a UW-Madison lab, student teachers put on white coats, and assemble their equipment while their instructor guides them.
Those of you who came from the state, you were charged with perhaps bringing your own soil sample. I think I saw some baggies. And so those of you who didn't, we have some soil samples for you. So you also can share with your neighbors.
Those in the lab understand the magnitude of their mission. They're testing the soil for microbes that could fight germs. If new antibiotics aren't found, the world could return to a time when simple infections were fatal. Merkel comprehends this both on a scientific and personal level. When he was 18 years old, he was diagnosed with leukemia and had a successful bone marrow transplant. After that operation, he relied on antibiotics to fight off infection while his immune system was compromised.
You know, the reality is now, it's not just that you have to go through a serious health crisis. There can be infections that were considered at one time something that was minor that now can ultimately become a crisis for certain individuals. And so we all have a vested interest in this.
A couple of trends brought us to what both Merkel and Handelsman call a public health crisis. In the 1980s, many big pharmaceutical companies stopped making antibiotics in favor of making more lucrative drugs. As the production of new antibiotics decreased, so-called superbugs had the chance to mutate and become resistant. The Small World Initiative hopes to get students and researchers looking for the building blocks to fight infection. The answer could be right under their feet. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up Monday on Central Time, Todd Berry, longtime head of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Association, is retiring, and he's worried about the rise of partisan divisions in Wisconsin politics. He tells us why he says our full-time legislature is a big part of the problem. We'll find out why Janesville will be the home of a unique production facility making an isotope used in the treatment of some kinds of cancer. And we'll take a look at etiquette in the digital age, and we'll find out why it's getting more common to ignore texts and emails and more accepted by some people, but not everyone, when you don't respond to that text or email. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.